This, of course, is the Abhidhamma. And we have to finish at 8:30 today, so I'm going to move very fast. The classes haven't been so organized by myself or scheduled as such, but I think today what we're going to round everything up is we'll speak a little bit about the actual contribution of Lord Chaitanya as far as philosophical points go. Study him in light of other sampradayas. So there's a verse on the board there, I don't know if everyone can see it. And this is one of the seed verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course. So it's Rite Atamya Prati Ute. So I can't see the road, it's light, it's totally light. I'll just go with people here. Rite Atam Yat Pratiyata Pratiyata
Pratiyata
Na
Na
Pratiyata
Pratiyata
Cha
Cha
Atmani
Atmani
Tat
Tat
Vidyat
Vidyat
Atmana
Atmana
Mayam
Mayam
Yata
Yata
Avasha
Avasha
Yata
Yata
Tuma
Tuma
Prite Atam Ya Pityata
Prite Atam Ya Pityata
Prite Atam Ya Pityata
Prite Atam Ya Pityata
Na Pratiyate
Cha
Na Pratiyate Chakmani
Na Pratiyate Chakmani
Adhidhyaratmano Mayam
Adhidhyaratmano Mayam
Yatabhasho Yatatama
Yatabhasho Yatatama.
Anybody else?
Riteyatam Yapratiyata
Riteyatam Yapratiyata
What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusionary energy, for nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of a real light in the shadow, for in the light there are neither shadows nor reflection. Please repeat. What appears to be truth
without me
is certainly my illusionary energy. For nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection. Of a real light. In the shadows.
For
in the light.
There
is neither shadows. No reflections.
Prabhupada,
in the previous verse, the absolute truth and its nature has been explained. One must also understand that relative truth to actually know the absolute. The relative truth, which is called Maya, or material nature, is explained here. Maya has no independent existence. One who is less intelligent is captivated by the wonderful activities of Maya, but he does not understand that behind these activities is the direction of the Supreme Lord. In Bhagavad Gita it is said, Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyita Chacha Racharam. The material nature is working and producing moving and unmoving beings only by the supervision of Krishna. The real nature of Maya, the illusionary existence of the material manifestation, is clearly explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The absolute truth is substance, and the relative truth depends upon its relationship with the absolute truth for its existence. Maya means energy, therefore the relative truth is explained to be the energy of the absolute truth. Since it is difficult to understand the distinction between the absolute and relative truth, an example can be given for clarification. The absolute truth can be compared to the sun, which is appreciated in terms of two relative truths, reflection and darkness. Darkness is the absence of sunshine, and the reflection is the projection of sunlight into darkness. Neither darkness nor reflection has an independent existence. Darkness comes when the sunshine is blocked. For example, if one stands facing the sun, his back will be in darkness. Since darkness stands in the absence of the sun, it is therefore relative to the sun. The spiritual world is compared to the real sunshine, and the material world is compared to the dark regions where the sun is not visible. When the material manifestation appears very wonderful, this is due to the perverted reflection of the supreme sunshine, the absolute truth, as confirmed in the Vedanta Sutra. Whatever one can see has its substance in the absolute. As darkness is situated far away from the sun, so the material world is also far away from the spiritual world. The Vedic literature directs us not to be captivated by the dark regions, tama, but to try to reach the shining regions of the absolute, yoga dham. The spiritual world is brightly illuminated, but the material world is wrapped in darkness. In the material world, sunshine, moonshine, or different kinds of artificial light are acquired to dispel darkness, especially at night. For by the nature, the material world is dark. Therefore, the Supreme Lord has arranged for sunshine and moonshine. But in his abode, as described in the Bhagavad Gita 15.6, there is no necessity for lighting by sunshine, moonshine, or electricity, because everything is self-effulgent. That which is relative, temporary, and far away from the absolute truth is called Maya or ignorance. This illusion is exhibited in two ways, as explained in Bhagavad Gita. The inferior illusion is inert matter, and the superior illusion is the living entity. The living entities are called illusory in this context only because they are implicated in the illusionary structures and activities of the material world. Actually, the living entities are not illusory, for they are parts of the superior energy of the Supreme Lord, and do not have to be covered by Maya if they do not want to be so. The actions of the living entities in the spiritual kingdom are not illusory. They are the actual eternal activities of liberated souls.
Atiritanya pratityeta na pratiyate chatmane Adhidhyaratmano mayam yato basho yati tamam.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada.
What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusionary energy, but nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of a real light in the shadows, for in the light there is neither shadows nor reflection.
Ova jnana timuram dasya jnana jnana salakaya chakshuram nirathamena kasma shri durvayamaha.
Sri Chaitanya Manopesham Chaitanya Mena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kramayam Datati Swamadantinam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Prabhava Srivasati Gaura Bhaktavinda
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So this verse is one of the four seed verses given by Lord Krishna to Lord Brahma. What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusory energy, for nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of a real light in the shadows, for in the light there is neither shadows nor reflection. So, when Lord Chaitanya appeared in the material world, the predominant philosophy, of course, which is always there, is the constant conflict between impersonalism and personalism. So the difficulty with personalism is that because we're dealing with variegatedness, and variegatedness is always a problem. Because as soon as there is any kind of variegatedness of variety, then it's automatically assumed that that variegatedness is material. In the material world, our experience of variegatedness, or phenomenal objects, is that they are disruptive, hostile, they are temporary, and they are limited in experience. So, it's not, in one sense, it's not the variety that is the problem. The problem with the variety is actually the experience of variety. So as Prabhupada says, that he was saying, that variety is the spice of life, and it is also the mother of enjoyment. So the varieties of the material world, the objects of this material world, they are the cause of different types of happiness and different types of distress. Now, generally speaking, the experiences, as Krishna said, matrasprashas tukuntaya shitoshna sukha-dukha-da, that the experiences of distress within the material world are the cause of the unhappiness of the living entity. Therefore, the nature of the living entity is to avoid distress. So this idea of avoiding distress is also projected onto philosophy, because generally speaking, that when we come to the conclusion that the material world is not a nice place to enjoy, it is not what do you call it, sufficient for our enjoyment. It's not substantial for our enjoyment. Therefore, there's the tendency towards negation, or negative philosophy. Negation means to throw out, or to get rid of matter altogether. This is one of the sort of tendencies in human life also, that when someone has very bad experiences of the material world, then there is tendency towards suicide. This suicidal tendency is also there in philosophy. On account of our negative experiences of the material world, therefore we tend to reject the material world. So this, what we call, these two things are going on in the material world. One is called Bhoga, and one is called Tyaga. Bhoga Tyaga. We have some experiences of sense gratification, when the sense gratification itself is not up to standard, then we become renunciates. Just like when you get some not very palatable prasadam, you can easily become a renunciate. It's not difficult when you get some bland boiled khichdi to decide that you'll wait for the next prasadam. So the renunciation, this bhoga tyaga, this has been going on since time immemorial. The living entity is always trying to enjoy. He engages himself in enjoying activities, and then when the enjoyment itself is not up to standard, then he becomes a tyagi. So similarly with philosophy, that the conditioned living entity is trying to understand the material phenomena. He's trying to understand how material nature works. He's trying to understand the cosmic situation and his relationship with it. And when he finds himself baffled by so many different contradictions and so many different speculations and so many different ideas, then generally speaking, there's a tendency towards tyaga, renunciation. Renunciation of everything. So therefore, these monistic philosophies, these impersonal philosophies have come into being. The idea of getting rid of what is called the three different stages of experience in the material world. One is the observer, one is the instruments of observation, which are the senses, and the third one is the objects of observation, phenomena, material phenomena. So if one can get rid of observation and instruments of observation and object of observation, then one can eliminate everything. So therefore, the tendency towards liberation, as it says in Vedic literature, that there's dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So dharma means religiosity, moral principles. Artha means economic development. Kama means sense gratification. And moksha ultimately means liberation. So that after many, many lifetimes of trying to enjoy the material world, even when in this lifetime of making so many struggles to enjoy this material world, then there is a tendency to project onto the spiritual or the transcendental as being something impersonal or being something which is devoid of all variegatedness. If the absolute truth is devoid of all variegatedness, then there is no need of the existence of the soul. There is no need of the existence of the body, the senses, and there is no need of the existence of phenomena. So therefore, in the Vedic literature, there is, if you like, a very fine balance between understanding the absolute truth as personal and impersonal. The general tendency within Vedic literature, the general tendency within philosophy, is that God is mostly defined as impersonal. The reason that impersonalism is more attractive is because that if God is devoid of any form, if God is devoid of any pastimes or any entourage, if God doesn't have any sort of existence, then non-existence of God, non-existence of the living entity, is a very, very quick solution to all problems. If you bring in the idea of God as a person, then you bring in an enormous problem. Because if God is a person, then that means that God has a form. If God has a form, then he must also have activities. If God has activities, then he must be having those activities in a certain field. And if I have a relationship with God, then I must also have a form, and then I must also have instruments or senses, and I must have a relationship with him. Therefore, it is basically another problem, because I've already experienced the what do you call it, the disruption and the hostility of the relationships of the material world. So therefore, to project this onto the spiritual world means that then in the spiritual world there is also all sorts of problems. And this major problem of the spiritual world is that if God has form, then his form must be another product of Maya or illusion. So generally they are called Mayavadi because the impersonalists, they consider that any variety, especially the forms of demigods or the form of Lord Krishna or Rama or Vishnu or Shiva, that they are all simply manifestations of this Maya or illusionary energy. So here, this verse, what appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusionary energy, for nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of a real light in the shadows, for in the light there is neither shadows nor reflections. So when Lord Chaitanya came to show that actually this philosophy of what we call Achintya Veda, Abheda Tattva, that there is simultaneously inconceivable relationship between the living entity and Krishna. This relationship between Krishna and Krishna's energies is called Achintya Veda Abheda Tattva, one and different. So this simultaneously one and different is very, very difficult for people to comprehend, to understand how that the energy itself can be simultaneously God, and at the same time it can be different, completely different. Krishna says, although everything is resting in me, I am not in it. Behold my mystic power. So although all of the energy is resting in Krishna, Krishna at the same time is beyond the energy. So therefore this example is being used is like the sun, that the sun is the source of all energy within this universe. And at the same time, when there is a what we call a cloud in the sky, then the cloud is disrupting our view or interfering with our view of the sun. So within the cloud there is darkness. In other words, darkness is the manifestation in the absence of the sun. So darkness is the absence of the sun, and within that darkness, there is the manifestation of ignorance. So Krishna is explaining that whatever appears to be truth without me, so whatever appears to exist without Krishna, then within that, there is what is called Maya. Maya means this darkness or this actual, what is called, of course, a separated illusion. So Prabhupada gives a very nice example that sometimes the child becomes envious of the mother. And therefore, in order to pacify the disturbed child, the mother gives the child some imitation toys. For instance, the child wants to cook. So the mother gives the child some playthings by which the child can have a toy cooker. And the young girl is envious of the mother for having a child. So the mother gives the child a toy doll. And in this way, you'll find that the child becomes absorbed in having a child, in cooking for the child, in having very nice cooking things. And in that way, the child can very nicely engage itself in imitating the mother. So in that crude example, in the same way, the living entity, being part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, has the desire to be independent of God. This desire of independence is the natural nature of the living entity. Therefore, the Supreme Lord explained that there is superior energy, there is inferior energy, and there is marginal energy. The living entity is coming from the Tathagata Shakti, the marginal energy. Within that energy, the living entity, although very tiny, has the capacity or has the desire to act either as servant of God or to act independently of God. When the living entity desires to act independently of God, then he comes within this material energy in order to enact, or in order to act out his rebellious desire to lord it over Krishna's energy. In order to fully facilitate the living entity's desire to lord it over the material energy, the Supreme Lord gives the living entity different types of bodies with different types of capacities. So all of these different types of bodies, we can see by study, are all different types of capacities for exploiting the energy of Krishna, the energy of God. And therefore, all of these types of varieties, or all of these types of variegatedness, are simply different demonstrations of illusionary concept of being God. So, in the material world, when the living entity, by the grace of the Supreme Lord, becomes frustrated with his different activities of lording it over the material nature, then he turns towards philosophy. Because basically, by philosophical understanding, he can understand by his intelligence. As we can see, that the human being is the only one who's a philosopher. Animals are not philosophers. Animals are basically fully absorbed in the separated consciousness of lording it over small particles of God's energy. For instance, we see that whatever animal has got capacity, he makes full utilization of his capacity to lord it over a particular aspect of God's energy. For instance, if he's a lion, he can conquer over other animals. If he's a small insect, he can only conquer over a certain vegetation. If he's a bird, he may be able to conquer over certain aspects of the sky. So if we study, we'll find that the human being is the only animal who can actually rationalize his position and begin to actually understand that the futility of his position. So this futility of his position, or this, what do you call it, inadequacy of his enjoyment, or this, the particular experience of what we call hostility of matter, or disruption of the material world. So the living entity then, in the human form of life, becomes a philosopher. So therefore, he then tends towards different types of mental speculation. His tendency of speculation is to carry his superiority to another realm. In other words, as Prabhupada says, he's already been frustrated in the material world. In many ways, all of us, we want to become something in this material world. And then, when we realize we're nothing, then we decide, okay, I can't be anything in the material world, so let me go to the spiritual world and be something there. So what does he decide to be in the spiritual world? He decides to be God. Because he couldn't be God here. We tried our best. There's no one in this world who wouldn't like to be God. But after many lifetimes of trying to be the Lord, of trying to be the dominator of matter, one finally comes to the understanding that he's not doing very well. So then he becomes a liberationist, and then decides that by getting liberated from the material world, that he can go to the absolute realm and become one with the absolute truth. So this is what Prabhupada calls the last snare of Maya. So generally speaking, In most philosophies, in different degrees and different forms, we will find that this idea of emancipation, of becoming one with the Absolute Truth, is very attractive. Therefore, we find that the tendency towards, as in Buddhism, that there's what they call nirvana, total negation of matter, and upon negation of that matter, one merges one's, what we call one's spiritual energy into the absolute energy, one becomes nirvana. Nirvana means one becomes one with the light. So if God is just a light, and I'm a light, then when my little light goes with his big light, we both become one light. So similarly, if God is only energy, and I'm energy, when this energy becomes released from the conditions of matter, then that energy becomes one with that energy. Just like a drop of water in the ocean, when it becomes one with the ocean, it again becomes the ocean. So therefore, if you go through the Vedic philosophies, you will find that predominantly there is this impersonal aspect always predominating, that one on liberation becomes one or becomes God. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya came into the world to show this philosophy of the Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva, that phenomena or the material energy is actually a reflection of the reality that exists in the spiritual world. Now, the idea being in this is that if there is variegatedness, or if there is variety, then that means that variety is existing. But if you say that the absolute truth is impersonal, then why should you have variety? Why should he have variety either in the illusionary sense or in the absolute sense? There is no reason why, if the absolute truth is light, that light should suddenly decide without any reason that it will become variegated. In other words, if there is nothing, how can it suddenly become a complex something? How can a complexity of something, phenomena, come from a simple, impersonal, dead energy? So we can understand that if there is variety in the material world, that the variety of the material world is actually resting on the variety of the spiritual world. So, therefore, the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva is that all of this variety within the material world is existing, but it is existing for an inferior purpose. An inferior purpose. Therefore, the Upanishad says, Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purna Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishate. That the personality of God is perfect and complete. Because he is perfect and complete, of course, even in any philosophy, God must be perfect and complete. Whether he is impersonal or personal, you can't disassociate God from completeness. You can't disassociate the Absolute from being absolutely perfect and complete. Now, because the Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, then all things which emanate from the perfect and complete must also be perfect and complete in themselves. Even though so many complete units emanate from the Absolute Truth, still there is complete balance. So the idea is that all of the individual living entities who emanate from the Absolute Truth, they are also absolutely perfect and complete. So therefore, one may then still come to the argument that if God is absolutely perfect and complete, and his part and parcels are absolute, the jiva soul is absolutely perfect and complete, then where does this feeling of incompleteness come? Where does this feeling of incompleteness, where does this incomplete experience come? And this incomplete experience comes from not understanding the complete arrangement of the complete. In other words, because of incomplete knowledge. So Lord Chaitanya came to show that the living entity in the material world is separated from Krishna on account of imperfect knowledge, incomplete knowledge. So therefore, it is not a question of removing the material variety as to be the cure of our problems. It is not a question of what is called false renunciation, of giving up, artificially trying to give up the material varieties. Because even in impersonalism, there is no question of being able to give up everything. You cannot give up everything, because ultimately the body itself requires certain things for sustenance. So although you may be able to reduce your eating, you still have to eat. Although you may be able to reduce your sleeping, you still have to sleep. And although you may be able to reduce your variegated situation, you will always have to live in some situation. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya came to show that the problem with dealing with the variegatedness of this world is simply understanding the perfect arrangement of the Absolute Truth. And that is that the material phenomena, the material world, is actually created in order to actually elevate the living entity to different levels of devotional service. So the idea that Lord Chaitanya introduced is this process of Yukta Vairagya, or the principle of engaging the energy, because the next verse is Isha Vasham Idam Sarvam Yatkin Chaja Gadam Gat Tena Jatena Bhumbhuta Magada Akasha Siddhana. That everything animate and inanimate that is within this universe is owned and controlled by the Supreme Lord. One should therefore only accept those things which are put aside for one's own self, one's own quota, and one should not encroach upon other things, knowing well to whom they belong. So this philosophy of Krishna consciousness is perfect because it is an understanding that within the Lord's kingdom there is two types of variety. There is superior variety and inferior variety. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that there are two distinct types of energy. One is superior and one is inferior. So the material world is inferior energy, but this inferior energy is being inhabited by superior energy. In other words, that the material energy may be inferior, but the inhabitants of the living entity, the living soul, is the superior function within that inferior dead energy. So therefore, the principle of Krishna consciousness is to actually introduce superior knowledge. Superior knowledge means that the living entity is misusing his intelligence, misusing his activities in order to degrade himself more and more in the complications of this inferior energy, Maya. And so therefore, the superior philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tapa is to understand that material energy itself can be utilized in order to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, by superior knowledge, by superior intelligence, one can actually utilize everything in the service of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna consciousness itself is not in any way, negative, in the sense that this idea of simply negating matter or hiding away from the material energy or being particularly threatened by the material energy is not required. Because the idea of the Krishna consciousness is that the material energy is the shadow energy of Krishna. In other words, that the devotee can understand that there is also superior variegatedness. So if one understands, just like if you understand there's a person and there's his shadow, then obviously you would much rather have a relationship with the person than you would try to have a relationship with the shadow, isn't it? Because in the shadow, there may be certain resemblances of the person, but the shadow itself has no separate existence from the person. Similarly, the varieties of the material world have no separate existence from the varieties of the spiritual world. The only difference is that in the material world, the varieties are manifested on inferior substance, and the spiritual varieties are manifested on superior substance. So that superior substance is explained as Satchitananda Vigraha, that in the spiritual world, all varieties are manifested out of Sat, eternity, Chit, full of consciousness and knowledge, and Ananda, full of bliss. In the material world, varieties are manifested through the inferior substance of Achit, Asat, Achit, and Nirananda. So basically, we can study intelligently to understand that the varieties of this material world are manifested in Asat. Asat means that they are temporary. The actual manifestations of material sense gratification or material pleasure are all temporary. And because they are temporary, they are disruptive. On account of their disruptive nature, we can never actually capture anything here. So the desire to enjoy permanence is completely frustrated on account of the fact that every time we do actually capture some pleasure here in the material world, within a few moments it's gone. So it's not that there is not some pleasure. There is always pleasure in Krishna's kingdom, but because this pleasure has this fragmentation, this fragmentation caused by the influence of time, therefore the fragmental enjoyments that we get here, they are never sustainable. They will never actually give us any happiness. And the other quality of matter is that it is transitive, but also the experience itself is very limited because it is called Nirananda. Nirananda means that the example is used that just like when we go to the desert, we want to get water, but in the desert there is no water. But you may find that on account of the existence of water, there may be some little pockets of water in some plant, or some, there might be a little bit of water there, just about to sustain our body. So in the same way, in the material world, the living entity is anxious to get ananda, but instead he is experiencing what is called nirananda. Nirananda means there is no real ananda, but there is this semblance, or there is this reflective idea of ananda. In other words, because the living entity knows that ananda exists, therefore he is totally dependent on that ananda, and on account of his total dependency on that ananda, he therefore tries to squeeze out some ananda in the material world. Even though there's no real ananda here, but he tries to, in so many different ways, to squeeze out that ananda. And this, of course, other aspect of chit potency is that the living entity is existing in full consciousness, full sentient. We are fully sentient beings, but in the material world, this is a non-sentient energy. Therefore, we are always experiencing incompatibility between the living force and the dead force of matter. So, on account of these experiences, the living entity has tendency to speculate on the transcendental situation, that if one is to go to the transcendental world, then hopefully there will be none of these varieties that are existing here in the material world. So therefore, this study of the Absolute Truth, when the Supreme Lord comes, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, avajanampi mamudha, that those who are foolish and those who are very much small-minded, guratma, they cannot understand that actually my Supreme Personality, my Personality, and that when he comes into the material world, he actually displays his pastimes. Now, when he comes into the material world and displays his pastimes, because of our experience of pastimes in the material world, then we naturally try to see God within a material conception. And therefore, we find that when Krishna comes to the material world, most people think that Krishna, at best, is able to do a few wonderful tricks. He may be a great magician or a yogi or a philosopher or whatever, but in actuality, he is only another product of the material energy. So this is the problem, and has been the problem with the study of Krishna down through the ages, that this idea that Krishna, because Krishna is engaged in similar activities that we are engaged in, and therefore he is also a victim of the material energy. But Lord Chaitanya came to show, because in actuality, if you study, one of the great contradictions of Lord Chaitanya's life was that Lord Chaitanya was a very strict renunciate. There is no practically greater example of renunciation than that which was exhibited by Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya was so renounced that he would not even look at the form, a carving of a woman. He would not be ever seen as a sannyasi in the association of women. He would not even entertain his own disciples who were women to come into his association. So we can see that Lord Chaitanya was extremely strict as a sannyasi. And still at the same time, Lord Chaitanya would go mad upon hearing the pastimes of the gopis and Krishna. So this example of listening to the what seems to be licentious activities, or what seems to be sensual activities going on between Krishna and the gopis, but Lord Chaitanya immersed himself deeply in those pastimes, listening to the poetry of Jayadev Goswami, Bhuvamangal Thakur. All of these poetry, if you read them, practically you won't be able to comprehend, because they are very, very confidential pastimes. And in some ways, they could be even bordering on erotic activities. So therefore, for the great pundits or the great scholars of Varanasi, they were very surprised that Lord Chaitanya, who was the great renunciate and the great sannyasi, was going around the streets playing instruments, singing and dancing, and immersing himself in what appeared to be neophyte activities. Of course, for the Mayavadis or impersonalists, these activities of Krishna, Krishna's engagement and activities with the gopis and the coward boys and Vrindavan and all that, they're considered to be for those who are sentimental, for those who don't have a very deep understanding of the absolute truth, and therefore they're definitely not the activities of a sannyasi. They may be alright for householders who are a bit sort of sentimental and they need a little extra encouragement in order to focus on the absolute truth, Brahman. They may need to have this idea that Brahman has a form or Brahman has certain activities. Of course, the impersonalists know that these activities and these things are all just another, manifestation of Maya. So therefore, when Lord Chaitanya came into the arena of these great philosophers, of Prakashananda Saraswati and his followers, then he came there in order to give them the great benediction of understanding Krishna consciousness. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya came actually in order to reveal the depth or the actual unlimited depth of this philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. The philosophy is that in the spiritual world the reality is there, and this reality is the eternal lila of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that the absolute truth is Krishna, that Krishna is engaged in unlimited pastimes. Those pastimes are all inconceivable. They are beyond the conception of the human mind. They're beyond the conception of the human brain. They cannot be understood by any kind of speculation, by any kind of material adjustment. And that the varieties of the spiritual world are all completely wholesome. They are unlimitedly perfect. So, in the sense that the problem that the impersonalists have with variety is that as soon as you have variety, you have duality. As soon as there is duality, then there can't be an absolute thing. Absolute thing is a thing which must exist absolutely on its own. It cannot. You cannot have two absolute truths, or three absolute truths, or four absolute truths. In other words, when there's two, there's duality, then the absolute truth is not properly defined. But what Lord Chaitanya came to explain is that the absolute truth is one. But because the absolute truth is a person, therefore all of the varieties of the spiritual world are of the same absolute nature as the absolute person. So therefore there is absolutely no distinction between Krishna, Krishna's forms, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's entourage. They are all of the same transcendental absolute nature. And therefore the variegatedness of the spiritual world is completely and utterly one with Krishna. So therefore you have the philosophy of Achintya Bheda, Abheda Tapa, that the energy is simultaneously equally one and non-different from the energetic. Now the difference is that in the material world that the energy is different from the energetic. You understand? So therefore, because in the material world, the energy is different from the energetic, therefore the experiences within the energy, that is why I used this verse this morning, that whatever appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusory energy, for nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of real light in the shadows, for in the light there is neither shadows nor reflection. So similarly, the so-called reflective energy of the material world is also absolutely simultaneously non-different from the absolute truth. Therefore, what Krishna consciousness is doing is simply acknowledging that this energy of the material world is also simultaneously non-different from Krishna. And therefore, this energy of the material world simply has to be re-engaged in the service of Krishna in order to bring about its full, absolute spiritual potency. So Lord Chaitanya introduced this Sankirtan movement, this Krishna consciousness movement, in order to show the practical example of Yukta Vairagya, of utilizing one's life, utilizing one's body, utilizing one's senses, utilizing everything for the pleasure of Krishna. Prabhupada says we can even utilize the atomic bombs for Krishna. And this is how that by utilization of everything in the service of Krishna, then that energy again becomes reinstated onto its spiritual platform. So that is why we have in Krishna consciousness also variety. In this temple there is so much variety, Radha and Krishna are there. But they appear, in one mundane sense, to be made of marble. But they are not made of marble. They are absolute transcendental spiritual energy, completely non-different from the same spiritual energy that is existing in the spiritual world. Therefore they are simultaneously one, and at the same time, from our mundane perception, different from the absolute truth. Anyway, I have to stop here. I've gone a little bit over time. So, is there any quick questions on that?
Yeah, someone was asking why. I was preaching to a person and she asked me in the first group or is there any possible for in the spiritual world? I told her there is only bliss in heaven, and in this world we find love. So is it possible for me to experience happiness without experiencing the first? Is it possible for someone to be some place to be life without? You understand?
Well, of course, if you say that, is it possible to experience happiness in the spiritual world without distress, there actually is no such thing as distress in the spiritual world. You see, distress only comes from forgetfulness of Krishna. So, therefore, what we experience as distress is actually only the absence of happiness. Just like what we experience as darkness, there's no such thing as darkness. There is, if you like it, looking at another sense, there is only the absence of light. Darkness is manifested on account of the absence of light. So in the spiritual world, there is no darkness, there's only light. So in the same way, in the spiritual world, there is only Ananda Moya Vyasa, there is only pleasure energy of Krishna. Therefore, there's not even a hint of distress. The different types of so-called varieties of this anxiety that are in the spiritual world are just different types of ecstasies. Therefore, even in Krishna consciousness, we have a practical experience of that. That in Krishna consciousness, there is no distress. There's actually no distress. Really, if one is Krishna consciousness, it's just another different type of ecstasy. You see? Just like the example was Kunti. Kunti was suffering so much, but actually this gave her great ecstasy. Therefore she prayed to Lord Krishna, increase my suffering. The prayers of Queen Kunti, you can see, she's praying to Krishna that you please increase my suffering more and more, because by increasing the suffering more and more, I will remember you more and more, and therefore I will increase my ecstasy more and more. So for a devotee, there is no distress. There may be different types of so-called mundane adversities, but these are just more cause for the devotee to take shelter of Krishna and thereby increase his ecstasy. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur
Mananda. Now you were saying about to pray for suffering. Among class, a devotee only prays for suffering.
And I'd say only, but I said that he. There's no problem with suffering.
But doesn't it? Because I'm real weak, I just think it puts me off the practice here.
Huh?
It puts me off practicing.
It puts you off practicing Krishna consciousness?
Even though I know I suffer if I leave, or
yeah? The thing is, you suffer whether you're here, whether you're there, or you're anywhere. Because you're destined to suffer. So you'll suffer. So the problem is not suffering, the problem is what you're going to do about the suffering. Isn't it? The problem is what you're going to do about the suffering. So if you're going to suffer anyway, why not suffer in the service of Krishna? Rather than suffer in the service of Maya. If you serve Maya, you suffer. If you serve Krishna, you suffer. So instead of suffering in the service of Maya, why not suffer in the service of Krishna?
Yeah, makes more sense.
Makes more sense. Then at the end of your suffering, you go back home, back to God. Whereas if you're serving Maya, you're suffering in Maya. Then at the end of your suffering in Maya, again you come back next life to suffer again in Maya. And at the end of that life, again you come back again to suffer again.
Isn't it? Sometimes you can be suffering so much you can't remember Krishna.
Yeah, you can suffer so much you can't remember Krishna. But generally, Krishna doesn't make you suffer that much.
Just enough to take shelter.
Yeah. Generally, it's after the devotees, so that when we do get the various types of sufferings, these are just little slaps. Keep us in the check.
In other words, if we were enjoying too much, we would be Krishna. Because we're not interested in Krishna, we're interested in enjoying our tendency. We won't be happy. What do we get out of it? Interested in enjoying, did you say? We're interested in enjoying, not Krishna.